folks. You're listening to
Stinker!
Another edition of Stick Work with Fab and Katz. I'm Fab.
I'm Fab Katz.
We've got three special guests on the show today. We have Ryan Dixon from the Hockey News. We have Michael Finewax from Roto World. And last but certainly not least, we have Eric Prime from the Fan 590 and Rogers Sportsnet. Also, we're going to be discussing our Tyrannosaurus Rex, and we're also going to touch upon some of the information that we got here from our interviews. You guys ready? Let's rock and roll.
We're here now with Eric Prime from the Fan 590, who is the regular reporter for the Toronto Marlies. Thanks for doing this, Eric.
Anytime, Gus. Appreciate you having me on, buddy.
So, have you been to every game this year? What can you tell our listeners about the Toronto Marlies?
I've been to every home game but one thus far. I got lots of things to tell you about the Marlies. The first and foremost, they're having a little bit of difficulties putting the puck in the net because they're short a few forwards these days. You saw the game the other night. They were shut out to the Abbotsford Heat, and they just had no offensive kick whatsoever. It was a tough one to watch.
It's almost a mirror image of the parent club at the moment.
Well, a little different, I think. I mean, I think, to me, the difference was the other night against Abbotsford, the Marlies were just dull, slow, not on anything, whereas the Leafs seemed to hold the play and grind away and outskate their opponent all night long and have no talent to put the puck in the net. And unfortunately, the Marlies just don't have enough. They're a very young squad with not enough of talent right now, and they don't have it. It was ugly the other day. They're short some forwards. They're short pretty much a whole first line worth of players due to injury call-ups. They're missing Darryl Boyce and Alex Foster and Tyler Bozak due to injuries, three of their top three. And then Christian Hansen was called up, and he was leading the team in scoring. And I guess that happens in the AHL. Coach Aikens the other day was saying it's the nature of the beast. You know, I'm not getting frustrated. You just got to get used to it. It's unfortunate.
You kind of see a little situation playing out now, maybe even with goaltending, considering what's happening in Toronto. And they got Adam Monroe on a pro tryout contract. It's a disaster down there.
Oh, man, it's unbelievable. I was saying to Aikens the other night, it was just me and him. We had a little one-on-one the other night, and
nice and cozy.
I asked him, are you getting frustrated? And with the goaltending situation right now, the Marlies are now starting Andrew Engelage. I've been having trouble pronouncing. You were hearing it the other night.
Yeah.
But they're now starting him in goal. He is their fourth string goalie, you would say, because they've had Joey McDonald, who's now up with the Leafs, Andrew Reimer, who's now injured, and then Adam Monroe, who's on the PTO tryouts, and he's been playing some decent hockey, but they started Engelage last night, and I mean, young kid looking a little shaky. Unfortunately, you're not going to win hockey games when your goalie's the fourth string, when you're losing a whole first line full of players. But as, again, Dallas Aikens says to me the other night, is when you're in the AHL, first thing isn't always winning and losing. He's in charge of player development. So well, you're talking about where there's certain players in this lineup right now that are going to be Maple Leafs. And his goal is making them better hockey players. And so they're losing games, but it's not necessarily all terrible.
You got that right, though, Eric. That's mainly what you're trying to do down in your minor league affiliate. You want to make sure that you're getting kids prepared to be able to come in and take in a roster spot at some point in the future. It's hard to argue with Aikens' philosophy, but, you know, even as a fan, a casual fan that wants to go to Marlies games, a winning percentage would be more enticing.
No, I know exactly what you feel, and it's going to be tough for the Marlies these days. If people were saying at the start of the year, even when they had their full roster, and even when you have your top two goalies, They're a very young team. They're going to have trouble scoring goals. Like, this is a league full of men, and there's a lot of 19, 20, not quite 19, but there's a couple. I mean, Andrew Greenup is just 20 years old, 20, 21, 22-year-olds on this Marlies team who are younger than the rest of the league, and this league is full of players who work their tails off to make themselves very strong, gritty guys, and the Marlies are going to have some troubles scoring goals. Right now, they have guys such as Victor Stahlberg on the team, somebody we've got to talk about when we talk about the Toronto Marlies right now, because Definitely. He's a Marlie, yep. And he won't be on this team for long. I mean, I'm of the opinion that, hey, keep him there as long as until he's absolutely dominating the league, but he's over a point a game. We sit there and watch him, and he's flying around the ice. The other night with the Marlies, when they had their 3-0 loss to Abbotsford, it was a man among boys with the rest of his team. He's with this team, banged up forwards. They've called up players from different leagues, and there's just no one for him to play with right now. He's flying around the ice and feeding people that just can't bury the puck, feeding guys such as Mr. Greg Scott, who has played 14 games with the Marlies and has 1 point on the season, feeding him great passes at certain times in the night, and that guy's just not going to bury pucks for him. It's unfortunate, because Victor Stahlberg's still playing some great hockey.
It's almost a wonder to see the way that he's kind of performed. You know, and as I was saying to you the other night as well, it almost looks like after the hit with Volchenkov, he's taking a lot more outside routes and not necessarily driving to the net. And you had a very good point about your observation seems to be a little bit more poignant than mine.
I don't know. You know, I've been thinking about it. We had a good debate the other night, me and you, Gus, about this. And it's one or the other. So it's A, Stahlberg is declining those routes. B, he's just getting pushed to the outside by defensemen who realize this guy is very fast and has got some wheels and some dangles, and they got to keep a closer eye on it. Or C, he's sitting in the AHL now and doesn't have quite as much ambition as he did during rookie camp when the whole city of Toronto is watching him. The other night they have 1,600 fans in Rico, but no Brian Burke up in the box. And so all of a sudden things aren't as glorious for Victor if he can cut towards the middle. But wow, does he ever have wheels? Sometimes when he picks up that puck, the whole building sort of goes, whoa, look at this guy. Like, here he goes. He's, to me, to my eye, and I've watched my fair share of hockey, pretty clear he's the best hockey player on the ice out there. He's young, he's talented, and he's going places.
Yeah,
hopefully it's with the Maple Leafs.
Well, most of the time that you see him, he is dominating on some level, whether it's by scoring or even physically down low. But, there's another player on the Marlies that I think could use a little bit more, I don't know what the word is. Is it enthusiasm, trying to get to the net?
Absolutely. That's the one in my brain right there, too. It's unfortunate because I've been sticking up for this guy for a while now. A lot of people say, when I tell people I'm covering the Marlies for the Fan 590, and they say, oh, okay, so, you know, what's going on down there? You know, who's down there? Is Yuri Talusti a career Marlie? And I always say, hey, let's relax here. The kid's 21.
Yeah.
He's not only the youngest player on the Leafs, but he was he wouldn't be because Luke Shen's there, but he was the youngest player on the Marlies last year. Like, let's give this kid some space. He's in a new country. He's learning the language. His body itself is not only was he 20 and now 21 years old, but his body is one of those that looks like it will fill in and get larger as he gets older. Like, you look at the guy, he's still got the kid face.
Yeah.
So I've been sticking up for him, but the last couple weeks, the last few weeks, he just looks down, digressed, not skating after pucks, not skating when he should be skating. He was a little under the weather for a while, so I cut him some slack. Wow, does he ever have talent at times. Like, we were talking the other night, February last season.
Oh, yeah.
Yuri Talusti was the best player in the AHL. And the AHL is the best league other than
the NHL.
So if Yuri Talusti, not only was he the best player, he had a week where he had 5 goals in a game and 6 points in a game.
Right.
Like, I don't care what hockey you're playing. I play house league hockey, and guys can't do that. I mean, when you're playing in the second-best league in the NHL, you're 21 years old, and you're putting up numbers like that. Like, let's give this kid a little bit of slack. He looks, when he goes to the NHL, he looks like a totally different player. He stays to the outside. He looks like a deer caught in the headlights. I really do think this guy is going to be probably a second-line NHLer at some point in his career. Unfortunately, I'm not too sure if it's going to be with the Maple Leafs. I don't see how much longer people will last for him being so slow at progressing.
The Leafs are looking at the Marlies and seeing and evaluating their talent there and just looking. Are they able to move ahead with whatever is then
on the Baby Buds. And, you know, you make a very good point about their development. Talusti is a little bit of a question mark. There's one more player that I really would like to know about, and that's Tyler Bozak, and we haven't seen a lot of him there.
No, he, even the second half of rookie camp, into training camp, the second half of training camp, he started to fizzle a bit. He's younger, again, in a similar sense to Talusti, but even more, even higher. He's got a smaller body, and he's got to put on some pounds. There's no question about it. But he's got dangles. So at some point, I mean, he's been a goal scorer and a point getter all the way up in his career. Christian Hansen, who's now up with the Maple Leafs, was never scoring nearly as many points in the NCAA as Tyler Bozak. Tyler Bozak was always over a point a game all the way up through his lower ranks, whereas Christian Hansen, more of a grinder, and now he's the bigger guy who's playing in the NHL, and Bozak is unfortunately a little under the weather, a little hurt, and still in the AHL. Bozak's only got 10 points in his 17 games, a minus 4 with the Toronto Marlies, so he's got to do some work. Brian Burke is known for giving his players some significant time, and he keeps players in the AHL for an extra year off. I got no problem with him leaving players such as Stahlberg and Bozak and Talusti a long time in this AHL. If his team's rebuilding, if they're progressing, hey, keep them down there. Let them learn their tactics. This Dallas Aikens was hired as the head coach because he is a man who thinks about player development, about fitness, about becoming stronger, about learning the game of hockey. And they're teaching guys like Daryl Bozak, Tyler Bozak, Victor Stahlberg, Christian Hansen, that that's what you got to do if you want to take it up to that next level. This whole Maple Leaf organization has all of a sudden taken this twist towards fitnessing their players to become tops in the league. Brian Burke came over here, Ron Wilson, and said, hey, look, these players we have right now are dogging it by the end of their shifts and by the end of the game, and we've got to do something about it. They hired the Carmichael Group this season to throw them all on the bikes and create a program that they could monitor and see how their players are working over the off season. And it seems to, in my mind, watching the games, watching both the Maple Leafs and the Marlies, that both these teams have serious legs. That the talent is lacking on both squads. They're having trouble putting pucks in the net, but they are out skating teams from start to finish. Minus the second period
right.
for the Marlies, but we'll get to that in a second. Third period, the Marlies have they are 26-11 this season in the third period against the oppositions. They're also 36. They're down 36-11 to oppositions in the second period, but the Marlies are defeating teams 26-11 in the third period, and that has meant a lot of comebacks. Especially in the last couple weeks, they've come back on a few teams and beat them in both the third period and overtime. They were down 4-1 the other day heading into the third period and came out with a 5-4 regulation win, four straight unanswered goals. So I chalk that up to things such as fitness, and that's what Brian Burke and Ron Wilson instituted over the offseason. They want to see some legs on their team, and it seems to be working from my perspective.
Eric, that's just great insight, and we thank you very much, and we hope to have you as a recurring guest in the future.
Anytime, Gus. I enjoy talking hockey with you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Have a good one. Talk soon.
Speaking to Ryan Dixon from the Hockey News. Thanks for taking the time to do this, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
You're a bit of a Habs fan, aren't you?
It is true. They'll throw the mirage of nonpartisan hockey journalism out the window for the next 10 minutes.
Sounds good to me. Well, it's been a bit of a frustrating season for both Leaf fans and Montreal fans, but there are some good signs, I would presume. Let's talk first about the Kalchuk-Chura deal. How does that tie in with something that you wrote today on the Hockey News website?
Well, I just thought it was interesting because, of course, we're gearing up for the World Juniors again, which has sort of become every Canadian hockey fans' favorite time of year, sort of. Anyways, it's really become woven into the fabric of the holiday season, and, you know, not only do Canadians get swept up in it, but just fans in general of NHL teams do, because, of course, it's your chance to watch these kids you've heard about, but probably haven't seen that your team has drafted. And, you know, a lot of times it reminds me a lot of the Olympics, where a lot of the athletes, you don't even know their name before the event, and then they're complete household entities, you know, 2 weeks later, and that happens so much with the World Junior. But it's also important not to get too carried away with your optimism, because I was just glancing back at the 2016, because of the Chip Chura deal today, he was sent to Anaheim from Montreal for a fourth rounder, and you look at Chip Chura, he was the captain of that team among, you know, a bunch of worthy captains, really, that, you know, every World Junior team has like 10 captains from their club teams, and the goalie on that golden team was Justin Pogge, had 3 shutouts in the tournament, granted playing for a powerhouse, but, you know, both those franchises probably walked away from that tournament, and certainly the fans thinking, all right, we've really got something here. And fast forward 4 years, and Chip Chura has gone for a fourth rounder, and Pogge's out of the Leafs organization and playing in the ECHL at times this year. So it's important not to get too carried away.
How does that kind of translate into what Carey Price did? Because he did pretty much the same thing as Justin Pogge and was supposed to be the savior in Montreal as well.
Yeah, you know, I do really think the book is still out on Carey Price, and I feel a bit bad for the guy, just because, I mean, he has been moved along so fast, and the Habs fan in me does fear that they just thrust him into the limelight too soon. I mean, it's unavoidable in Montreal. The expectations will always be crushing, and the bottom line is you're either DNA programmed to handle it or you're not. And as much as I think that, you know, you learn to handle a bit, but at your, you know, at your core, either that's for you or it's not. And you know, Carey's, he came onto the scene and he was good. I don't think he was fantastic that rookie year, but he was pretty good. But of course, everyone was anxious to, you know, see him pick up the lineage from Ken Dryden and Patrick Waugh. And you, I mean, you just can't reasonably ask that of a player, any player really, and certainly any goalie with such a pressure-packed spot to play. So I think now we're seeing, after his down year last year, and obviously the mini Waugh impersonation at the end of the playoffs last year, he's starting to settle in. He's one of those guys who it's easy to forget he's as young as he is. He's only 22. He turned 22 in August, and he's still very much learning his position. And I think there's some encouraging signs there. And I think, you know, like anyone who's gone from being essentially a teenager to, you know, starting to become more of an adult, he's just starting to mature a little bit and feeling more comfortable with his surroundings. And this year the Canadiens went with Yaroslav Halak when Price wasn't at the top of his game early on. And I never understood why they wouldn't have done that earlier, because Halak, A, is a pretty good goalie, and B, there's no goalie in the world who's as young as Carey Price should, you know, have a number one job just handed to him and be above a little competition. So, you know, certainly he arrived in the league with as much fanfare as I would say any goalie, based on not only, you know, the huge shootout win over the U.S. and that year they won the World Junior. And then, don't forget, this guy took Hamilton to the Calder Cup and won it. I mean, he was the MVP. He was the guy on that team. So, of course, the expectations were sky high. And I think now we've seen a year and a half of Carey Price, and I think he's just starting to sort of feel a little more comfortable in his own skin and in that city. So I think there are some encouraging signs there for Price in Montreal.
I kind of bear a little similarity to what's happening in Toronto, only where it seemed like the fans really wanted Price to take over from Cristobal Huet at the time. And it's something similar to what might be going on here, with fans really wanting the monster Jonas Gustafsson to take the ball and run with it and kind of leave Vesa Toskalainen behind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Vesa certainly seems to have become a bit of an afterthought in Toronto. He's really only in the public's conscience when they're talking about whether he can be moved out with, I believe, his about $4 million worth of salary. And it's too bad, because Vesa, you know, first of all, he did a great job for Toronto's first year here. He looked very good. And one of the things that sort of strikes me is we were all talking about at that time, oh, Toskalainen has really got the mannerisms of that you need to play goal in Toronto or in any big media center, because he was, you know, easygoing Finn, as most Finns tend to be. And a lot of people initially were saying that about Gustafsson, because he just sort of seemed to have that disposition. But I kind of wonder if in the last month where, you know, again, it's very difficult for a young goalie, but expectations were raised, and they were raised because he played extremely well when he, especially when he initially came in. But, you know, the stress of all of a sudden, it, compounded by the fact that Toskola was forced to the sidelines because of injury, you know, all of a sudden people are looking at Gustafsson more as, can he come in and be the savior on this team? And, you know, that is certainly a lot for any 24-year-old to handle. And you can see definitely evidence of extreme athleticism there. I mean, you can't teach that. He's got the reflexes. He's got the size. He certainly makes some saves that really catch your attention and, you know, almost sort of Cujo-esque in that you think, how the heck did he get across there? But at the same time, you can see where, you know, his game needs to be refined. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he's a bit of a flailer in there right now, and there's, you know, some issues with his rebound control. But, I mean, the guy's been in the league for a month and a half and has battled some health problems here. So, you know, the key will be, obviously, you've got to give him a bigger sample before he can really determine how good this guy will be. Though, you know, he is on a one-year deal, so I guess at least we'll have to make some sort of decision at the end of the year in terms of what kind of commitment they want to make, just like the Canadians will with Carey Price, because he's an RFA heading into the summer as well.
Look at both. It looks like both franchises are on their way to solidifying their way, some way, somehow, from the net out. But one thing about Montreal that really was reminiscent of their style of play was how well they played on the power play for the last couple seasons. And this year, they just seem to be mired in the bottom third. I think the Markov absence, maybe even Kovalev not being there, hurt them a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. And you look at the Canadiens' D in successive years, they lost Sheldon Surrey and Mark Streit, and those were two guys who really made the power
shooters.
Play go. When,
yeah.
When Surrey left, he took his bomb with him to Edmonton, yep. There, and everyone thought, oh, that's the end of the power play. And lo and behold, little Mark Streit comes out of nowhere, and he was terrific. And, I mean, he can really crank it. And then they decided they didn't want to commit to him, and he went to the Islanders. And then last year, that power play started to take a bit of a step back for sure, even with Markov. And now you take Markov out of the mix, and
wow.
You've got a real problem.
Yeah,
so,
how do you even compete?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they certainly, they've sort of been cut off at the knees a little bit in terms of losing personnel up there. But, I mean, you could also make the argument, I guess, that in particular with Streit, I felt like there was never really any real chance they were going to bring Surrey back because they had to re-up Markov that year and certainly made the right choice there. But with Streit, I wonder if it was a mistaken evaluation because he's proven he can be a pretty good defenseman in the league and probably a little more dependable at 5-on-5 than Montreal sort of envisioned him. But that's neither here nor there because he's on Long Island. But, I mean, getting Andre Markov back will be definitely a massive boost. I mean, he's a bona fide power play quarterback. He's a very good defenseman with very good vision, and he can actually really crank it too. It's one thing that I'd like to see that team do a small change, but one that I think could be effective is to flip Markov to the other side on the blue line when he's playing the point so that as a left-hand shot,
he's
be,
able to
you know, at the top of the circle there. Yeah, and, I mean, he's a great puck distributor for sure, but if you can find someone, I mean, Bergeron, Marc-Andre Bergeron, who's the Band-Aid solution they brought in on the power play, he can really let it go too, but he hasn't really found his niche on that power play. So I think if you've got someone else up there at the point, a Plekanec or maybe even a Gomez sort of feathering the passes a la Cabrelle to McCabe once upon a time, you can also exploit Markov not just for his passing ability but for the fact that he can really let it go. So I think once he gets back, the power play will get better, but it's certainly taken a hit this season and last.
Well, I think we're seeing two franchises that are going to struggle their way possibly into a playoff run. The Leafs are trying to make a run to it, and Montreal seems to be slipping, so they're kind of both in that little range, and I think it's going to be interesting for both fan bases to watch them as we go forward.
Well, yeah, and this month is big for both teams,
yeah.
Particularly Montreal. I mean, they could get buried in December. They have 17 games in total. They've already lost one of them. They play more on the road, I believe. I think they only have 6 home games or something like that, and they're still going to be without Markov the whole time. Gionta's out. I wouldn't be surprised if when January 1st hits, the Canadiens are in real trouble, and to be honest with you, maybe looking more toward the likes of a Taylor Hall, or maybe
oh,
that's
wow.
a little crazy.
Oh,
but,
wow.
You know, at that point, if you're sitting 13th or 14th in the Eastern Conference, well,
You have decisions to make, I guess.
You have decisions to make at that point, absolutely. And can you really, I mean, the problem for the Canadians for a long time is they haven't had that it player in terms of a skater, especially up front. So, I mean, they don't have a lot of cap room via free agency, and top free agents, with the exception of, I guess, Camilleri and Gionta perhaps last year, have shown consistently that they don't want to go there. So if you're going to get that number one dynamic player, looks like you're going to have to draft them. So I think, yeah, they may have some hard questions to answer come January 1 if December goes the way it might.
Well, Ryan, I wish we had more time. Thank you very much for doing this. Everybody can check you out on
thehockeynews.com and, of course, in the Hockey News magazine on shelves everywhere.
That's great. Thanks again.
Okay, thanks, Gus.
I'm pouring Sean Don and I'm all the best weed, cause I got it going on.
And that was Ryan Dixon from the Hockey News discussing some Montreal Leaf matters, and I thought that he had some pretty interesting and poignant thoughts on Carey Price and what's going on with Jonas Gustafsson.
Yeah, you know, the Leafs beat the Habs 3-0 recently, and Carey Price did play very well in that game. He did stop 28 shots. Ryan Dixon had touched upon some very interesting points about Carey Price and how he's got very big shoes to fill in replacing Patrick Roy. In fact, the last time the Habs won the Cup was in 1993, and Patrick Roy was the last goalie. So there's a 16-year drought. They haven't even gotten to the conference finals since Patrick Roy was last in net. So maybe now you're starting to see some signs in Carey Price that he's becoming that mature goalie that everybody expected him to be. Is this guy the savior for the Montreal Canadiens? That remains to be seen for Habs fans. Now, moving forward, as far as goaltending is concerned in Toronto, Gustafsson was playing well against Montreal. It's unfortunate as to what happened to him, and hopefully everything is going to be okay, and hopefully the results come back and everything is fine and he'll be ready to go soon. Now, maybe being in Toronto, seeing that the city is a big pressure cooker, that could have a lot to do with the way he's been playing lately. I mean, it's not that he's been playing bad, but there have been occasions where he's allowed some bad goals.
And it could even be said that it's maybe one bad goal a game. That was something that ended up sending Raycroft out of town. And we're starting with a new goaltender with an issue that seems to be prevalent, not just to him, perhaps even to the entire team.
Let's give him the benefit of the doubt here. He is 24 years old, he's a young kid, and he did play well against Montreal. Which leads me to my next point, my Tyrannosaurus Rex.
And here it comes.
I'm going completely unconventional. And again, people are probably listening saying, dude, once again,
You're crazy.
Stop sniffing the gas when you're filling up your car at the gas station. Here goes nothing. Really going off the cuff with this one. My Tyrannosaurus Rex is Joey McDonald.
Joey Mac
from Pictou, Nova Scotia. That's right.
Wow. Now, why in the world would you pick Joey Mac as your Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Okay. Here are my reasons why I'm picking Joey Mac as my Tyrannosaurus Rex. He wasn't expected to step in to duty against Montreal. That was Gustafsson's game. Joey Mac would have been lucky if he saw any duty whatsoever in this stretch while Toskal is recovering from his injury. All these games were going to be Gustafsson's games to play, especially the upcoming games against Columbus and Boston, which happens to be the return of Phil Kessel. So I just wanted to throw that in there for fun. Joey Mac went in there cold in the second period. He was sitting on the bench saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to grab myself a bag of peanuts from the concession stand over there. Maybe grab myself a can of that Molson X. He came in and he stopped nearly 20 shots in the game. I know I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, but he does happen to be leading the Leafs in goals against average. He's got a 2.74 goals against average in the duty that he's had thus far. That's better than Gustafsson. That's better than Toskala. Having said that, my Tyrannosaurus Rex is Joey Mac. Gus, what about you, man? Who's your Tyrannosaurus Rex?
I'm going to take the easy route just because you ended up going off the board and going to pick Phil Kessel. There's been absolutely nothing but positive energy coming out of him. He shows you a different facet almost every single game. You know what he can bring. You know that he can take butts out of their seats and then put them back down very happy. I think that Phil Kessel deserves all the accolades that he's been getting, and I love the fact that he's been doing it pretty much on his own. So, Phil Kessel, you're my Tyrannosaurus Rex.
And you know what? It's very obvious. The guy's got 13 points in 14 games, averaging nearly a point a game, and he really isn't playing with a top-notch center. So, yeah, like you said, he's been doing it himself throughout the season thus far, and he's proven once again that he doesn't need that bona fide top-notch center. Guys, when we come back, we're going to have Michael Finewax from Roto World. Hang tight.
Back to Stickwork, and we're joined by Roto World's Michael Finewax. Michael, thank you very much for doing this.
My pleasure.
So, what does a fantasy expert do?
When I'm on, every morning, I have to go through all the newspapers, see what kind of injuries have happened, and relate it fantasy-wise to everyone who's interested, which is obvious. And, you know, I just have to go through all the blogs during the day and come up with pertinent information. So, we do about, on a busy day, maybe we'll do 75 to 80 players.
Wow.
And well, and on the weekend, on a Saturday, sometimes we can get up to, including our game reports, up to like 140, 150 different blurbs.
Oh, that's just crazy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, but it's something that you have to provide for your readership.
Exactly. You know what? I figure we hit 15 to 20% of all the players that we can on a Saturday, and over the course of a week, we have over 600 blurbs. So, you know, I mean, obviously we do more than one per player sometimes. Like Ovechkin might have 7 or 8 per week. But, we average close to a blurb a player per week.
Wow, that's pretty good information.
Yeah.
So what would your blurb say about the recent Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, on an individual basis, we talk about you know, for instance, that Joey McDonald's going to be the starting goaltender.
Right.
And I know they haven't called up a backup because Reimer's been hurt, and obviously Toskalin and Gustafsson aren't playing. So we'll just wait and hear who the Leafs finally decide to call up, and that'll be another blurb.
It could be a very interesting next few days, considering that the Rangers put Steven Valiquette on waivers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You just never know. You know, Leafs are a bit up against the cap, but you never know.
Well, with a little bit of relief, anything could possibly happen. So
exactly.
Let's go to some individual players.
Okay.
Michael, you and I, we've spoken about Leafs before, and, you know, it depends on what you're looking for your roster, but I'm sure that there's a few names that would definitely be considered a fantasy must. Thomas Cabrelle would be one. Phil Kessel would be another. Would there be any others on the Leafs?
Well, I've been really kind of surprised, just going through the information the past few days. Alexei Ponikarovsky is having a good fantasy season, surprisingly. He leads the Leafs in plus-minus with 5. He has 22 penalty minutes, which, outside of all their, well, for lack of better words, goons,
right.
is second. He's just a point behind Ian White. And he has 9 goals and 6 assists. You know, 3 goals on the power play. So I've been really, really surprised that he's done very quietly so well. The other player is obviously is Ian White, is just having a great fantasy season with 4 goals and 10 assists. He's also one of the 3 Leafs who's a plus at plus 4 with 23 penalty minutes. So those are the 2 Leafs who, outside of Kessel and Cabrelle, who in deeper pools should be selected for sure.
So where would you rank someone like, let's say, Nicholas Hagman, who's just had a hot stick lately, and, well, yeah, he could probably help some roster that needs a boost.
Oh, definitely. You know, 13 goals is 13 goals, and not too many guys in the league have that.
Getting a double digit is an accomplishment by November.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, he's on pace for a 40-goal season right now. Obviously, I don't think he'll do that. I think, but he does have a shot at 30, so he definitely does have fantasy value. He has very few assists, however. He only has 4 assists this season. So
right.
That sort of is tempers his value just a bit, and he's not a good plus-minus player. But right now, you'd have to take him because he's kind of hot. I know he hasn't scored in the last couple games, but I think he scored 6 in the previous 4 games.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable what can propel a player to put up some fantastic numbers in a short period of time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, too, those dips, it makes it very difficult because you want to keep that player in your lineup, but you don't know whether or not to start him game in, game out.
Well, you know, if a guy's done it in the past and he's into a slump, you sort of have to ride it out. A good example is, and it's not a Leaf, is Paul Kariya, who went 10 games without scoring a point. You know he's going to break out, and you hate to get upset with him just because he hasn't scored in 10 games and then just miss out, for argument's sakes, if he gets 3 or 4 points in one game and all of a sudden, I should have had him in there.
You know, we compete in an industry expert league where 2 seasons ago, actually it might have even been last season, I had the same kind of issue with Radim Vrbata.
Right.
Every time Vrbata would get injured, and they would say day-to-day, so I'd keep him out of my lineup, and he'd come back, and I remember one night, right before the All-Star break, he scored a hat-trick, and he was on the bench in my...
That happens to everybody.
And that's where you want to just take your head and bang it against the wall. It's futility at its best. Let's go back one second.
Sure.
How would you rate each of the Leafs' goalies, aside from the fact that they're a little bit injury-prone right now? Would they be top tier, middle tier, bottom tier?
Well, I'm really worried about Gustafsson with his heart problem. And they're making, well, for lack of better words, light of it right now that he's okay. He might miss a couple games. This is the second time it's happened to him in 2 months. And the operation that he had a couple months ago in September killed some of those bad cells. And they've reappeared because that's what happens. They regrow.
Right.
So that's a major concern. Like, hopefully it's absolutely nothing. And hopefully what happened to him was he took the Sudafed and his heart was racing because he was on medication.
Hmm.
But he's going to see the cardiologist tomorrow. I'd wait. I'd be, in the next couple of days, it's going to be a big deal with Gustafsson. Because if he has to have another operation, there's no saying he might not need a third or a fourth, because it doesn't always work. Right now, I wouldn't give him, you know, I'd be very, very wary right now. And it might be for only a few days, but at this point in time, I'd be a little bit wary.
Michael, you're killing me. I have both Gustafsson and Toskala in one, it's the Yahoo Friends and Family League, so right. I guess I'm pretty much screwed then.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying I'd be wary right now. You know, 2 days from now, come back with a great report.
That's very true.
Yep, but as of today, I wouldn't be jumping off. You know, for future, you know, he's a restricted free agent. Leafs might have some more trouble in that if he's not healthy.
I've always looked at it from a fantasy perspective, and obviously from a real life perspective.
Mm-hmm.
From the real life perspective, I'm looking at it saying, well, I agree with you entirely. So you put the scenario, suppose it's an important playoff game or even a game down the stretch where a playoff spot is up for grabs and, you know, some little thing happens and Gustafsson has to get pulled.
Right.
Reliability is part of being an athlete, and if you don't have that reliability, how good can you possibly be?
Well, right. Yeah, and I don't think he really knows right now.
So what do you think that really does to his fantasy? I wouldn't... Aside from the fact that I was a little bit goaded into getting into the Leafs' goaltending, I wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole at the moment.
Right, right. Toskala over the last year and a half has last year he was a fantasy zero. This year he's played well in a couple games, but I wouldn't rate him very highly right now. I'd say if there's 60 NHL goalies right now. He's definitely from between 45 and 60.
Gotcha. Well, let's move away from the net and go up front. What do you think of Mikhail Grabowski?
I like Grabowski. He's a streaky player, and he'll get you points in a bunch of games, and then you won't see him for 3 weeks. But again, if you're patient and just keep him in, and it's not a, you know, he can be really valuable some weeks in a head-to-head league, and he can be absolutely useless in other weeks because of his streakiness. He's a better rotisserie player because he'll compile half-decent stats throughout the year and ladd up for you. So I'd say in a deeper league, he's a good 3-4. He's probably a 4 center in deeper leagues.
I think I would agree with that. I would also agree very strongly with the fact that he's a better rotisserie player rather than head-to-head.
Yeah.
You don't want to take the chances of missing out on production, especially in important weeks.
Right.
So let's finish off with one player that seems to be the enigma, but I love him just for the shots on goal, Jason Blake. 2 goals in so far this season, and doesn't look like there's going to be any type of a breakout.
No. I mean, he doesn't even lead as many shots as he has. He doesn't even lead the Leafs in shots on goal right now.
Hmm.
Surprisingly, it's Lee Stepniak that has 2 more shots than him.
Yeah. Well, he's another one that's slumping, too. There's just no finish on this team.
Yeah. Fortunately, they have Kessel, who seems to, you know, who is their best player by far.
Hmm.
Jason Blake, I remember last year I had a question about Jason Blake, and I really shied, and he had a really good year last year, but I shied away from him because he's the type of guy, again, he's also a streaky player. Right now, his streak is pretty bad.
Pretty zero, yep.
Yeah, he hasn't scored in 5 games and after going 4 straight games with an assist, but Leafs are paying him the big bucks, or were paying him the big bucks to score. They signed him as a 40-goal scorer, and 2 goals in, is it 24 games? 26
yeah.
games? It's pretty poor.
And just a little over a quarter of the season, and
yeah.
You know, you can only reward effort.
A third of the season.
Yeah, a third.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can only reward effort for so long before you start making decisions to pull people out of the lineup, probably.
Yeah, I think of all the players who've scored, he has the second lowest scoring percentage behind Chad LaRose.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for doing this. It's always insightful, and I wish we could do it again sometime a little later on in the season.
Anytime, Gus. Thanks very much.
That's great. Thanks.
Take care.
Fab, where does the time go?
It's unbelievable how time flies when you're having fun, man.
We really want to thank our guest, Ryan Dixon from the Hockey News, Eric Prime from the Fan 590 and Rogers Sportsnet, and Michael Finewax, that fine fantasy advisor from Roto World. You're all welcome back, as the listeners are, to Stickwork again and again and again, and we'll see you next week.
Well, for now.